Welcome to Open Payments, brought to you by Finastra.
Hello, welcome everybody. Welcome to the real-time payments and payment modernization. My name is Robert Mancini. I'm head of payments with Finastra, and I'm joined here with two distinguished panelists, with Tim Mills and Joe Casale, and I'll just let them both introduce themselves quickly.
Sure, I'm Joe Casale. I'm from the New England Automated Clearinghouse, or NEACH. Been with them forever. We provide training and education to financial institutions who are our members.
And I'm Tim Mills with the Clearinghouse. I head up our business development area at the Clearinghouse. Clearinghouse is the private sector bank-owned network utility. We operate the only private sector ACH network, the largest private sector check image network, the high-value payment system called CHIPS, and most recently, and probably most excited about, is the real-time payments network, RTP.
So, Joe, a question for you is, as we look at the smaller FIs, as we go down market, I think this is going to be the next area of focus, right? Because the larger, the top 50, let's say, larger institutions are either live or going to go live. So as we start going down market, some of them are taking a wait-and-see approach, right? It's almost like they're waiting for this to be, I don't know, maybe they're waiting for 80% of the market to be using it. But my question to you is, what do you think are the implications for those laggards, for those banks that are just waiting it out and saying, you know, we're going to do this at some point in the future?
So I'm going to go off script for a second. Tim.
Turn the cameras off. No, it's kidding.
No, actually, I was hoping this would be on tape, so somewhere in the future I could be cited as the guy who solved the problem. Has the Fed, or what do you think of the idea of Fed approaching real-time payments and saying, we're thinking of building it. You built it. Can we use it?
I think that there's value. I mean, the Fed definitely could be a node on the network, and through their node could provide access to smaller FIs. Yeah, that's one model I think that's viable.
You got that on tape, right? All right. You guys are witnesses. All right. So we're seeing a lot, you know, information from the field.
So before you go there, yeah. Do you really think that's a viable option?
I think, I mean, there was, years ago, there was a move to provide added value through providing formatted addenda records to institutions. And the Fed bought Bottom Line Solutions, became Fed EDI. The shortcut to ubiquity, from my opinion, so let's, again, underline my opinion, shortcut to ubiquity is to become a node on the network. The shortcut to what I see as primarily mimicking what you've already built is to build or buy, right?
Well, but the other piece of this, let's not oversimplify it. Mm-hmm. We still, some of the same issues that we just spoke about, especially with down market FIs, the integration with their core platforms. They're providing them with the modernized payment infrastructure to be able to support 24/7 processing. We still have to work through those, but I think you're on the right track. There may be other ways to approach ubiquity, rather than saying the best way to do it is to flood the market with multiple solutions that don't talk to one another.
Am I naive, Rob?
Not at all.
Oh, all right. I welcome feedback. So
no, it's just I think it's sometimes it's what makes sense and what's could be political and perceptions in the marketplace. And so I kind of look at things from a lot of different angles. Mm-hmm. And, if you would have asked me, 20, 30 years ago, what's going to survive, VHS or beta? I mean, beta was a superior technology. It was smaller. And I mean,
and here we are 30 years later, Beta doesn't exist and VHS doesn't exist.
Exactly. Exactly. So sometimes, you know, wisdom does not win, right? It's there's other factors that come into play.
Yep.
So that's the part that I find is challenging with what you've proposed. It's not the wisdom part of it. Mm-hmm. It's the other aspects of it.
But if everyone in the audience could just tell two folks and have them tell two folks, we could get something going. Right, little hashtag. There we go. Excellent. So what am I seeing in the industry from my members? I see a fair number of members who don't really know about real-time payments. Mm-hmm. So they're just asking a lot of questions. They will consume as much information as you give them, but they're not doing anything with it. We do see a lot of that. And they're those members that are stuck to their core and only can do what their core tells them to do, and probably are not allowed to look outside of their core for any solutions. Another example, and I think about this all the time. There are those. So I thought a lot of my members were like that. But if you've ever been down the Cape, Cape Cod in Massachusetts. There's a canal there, and the water there is roiling. There's a lot of activity going on underneath that water. We touch base with members, and we read it in the news that they're meeting with innovation organizations. They're meeting with fintech centers. We got a mass challenge in DCU Fintech Innovation Center in Boston. Every once in a while, I see in news that one of my members is meeting with them just talking about innovation. And then we have those members that jumped in 2 feet, innovating, great ideas. So it may sound bleak, and I don't like to sound bleak, but sometimes you got to tell the truth. If you're an institution and you're not looking at anything, you're going to have customers that, you know, one day, and I think that the stats from the UK say this, it was live and then it was used. One day, you're going to see a solution come along that solves your members' or your customers' pain point, and they're going to say, oh, I need that. And they're going to be gone. And then by the time you come around as an institution and offer that same service, why, I have something that works. Why would I switch back? I've been around a long time, and there's been innovation along the way, and folks have been okay with not innovating. I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think you can survive if you don't offer the services that are faster and answer those pain points.
Okay, great. Thank you. So we have one more question. We have like 5 minutes left, so I think we have time for one more question. Let me just kind of frame it up. So I want to kind of switch it up to the innovation component of it. You know, I mentioned earlier, right, about how a lot of the innovation is happening outside of Finastra through our partner ecosystem. I'm seeing customers out there that are really reinventing themselves, right? Whether it's leveraging a CRM, whether it's a Dynamics or Salesforce or whatever, to reimagine that customer journey across all functions, the way they sell to the customer, the way they deliver their solutions, the way they service them, the way they onboard them, and the way they manage those accounts, right? And as through that entire customer journey. And for me, you know, I look at it as a component, as technology and collaboration within the ecosystem coming together to enable that. So as a final question to you is, I just wanted some of your closing thoughts around the future of banking and what it's going to take for banks to get there, to meet those customer, not only meet the customer demands, but actually drive the value proposition through a transformational change.
You know, I think Joe touched on it a few minutes ago when he talked about innovation. Innovation is no longer an option. It becomes table stakes. And I don't care if you're the smallest financial institution in the country or the largest financial institution in the country, if you're not actively innovating, you're ultimately going to make yourself extinct. I think FIs have to realize that they may not have the resources or the intellectual capital in-house. There's nothing wrong with that. There are, I think the FIs that are going to be winners are going to be those that are effective at developing partnerships. So working with other fintechs, setting up innovation communities or participating in innovation communities. And I think, you know, along with that innovation, and this is something that I think for smaller FIs has not always been considered a part of, you know, kind of business as usual, and that is being strategic, developing a payment strategy. You know, we haven't had to develop strategies because everything's kind of worked on autopilot for the last 40 plus years. It's kind of, look, you've got chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, those are the flavors we operate with, and that's just the way of the world. And now you have expectations in the marketplace that maybe I want Neapolitan, or maybe I want, you know, butter brickle. So, you know, I think that innovation does become, it just becomes a part of what FIs need to be good at doing, just as a matter of remaining relevant.
I completely agree. I think the one thing in financial institutions have that they should leverage is trust. They have trust that I can put my money there. They're going to give me a mortgage that is the best one they can give me. I think that's what they have to leverage. I think not innovating has led to a rise in apps, in fintechs, in solutions that solve pain points that banks and credit unions should have solved. And then there was an age of the fintechs are invading, we're going to fight them. Done, over. The time now is to collaborate. Mm-hmm. Fintechs do technology well. Banks do trust well. Figure out how to solve your pains.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Let's do some Q&A. Do we have any questions from the audience? All right, we have one question.
Okay, hi. So in talking through the history of payments, check, wire, ACH, real time, how much cannibalization has there really been on wire? And where do you think all of this new activity is coming from? Will it shift from check ever? And just your thoughts around that.
Yeah, I think when it comes to RTP, you know, what's interesting is that RTP is probably the first payment rail that I'm aware of that we developed that wasn't developed to compete with any of the legacy rails. It was really developed to solve for inefficiencies that those other rails couldn't solve for. So that being said, the idea isn't to retire any of the payment rails. Will there be migration? Yeah, there will be. I tend to think with RTP, you're going to predominantly see that in the cash and check space. I think you're spot on when you say that we haven't seen cannibalization, for instance, from wires. And I don't expect that you will see a lot of cannibalization in that space. You know, what you have to keep in mind is that it's really about use cases. So if you look at RTP, RTP is a good fit, as I mentioned before, for areas where our legacy rails haven't been a good fit. So for example, no offense, Joe, but ACH over the internet, in my mind, has always been kind of a, what were we thinking when we came up with that? But that's what we had, and we made it work. RTP is a good fit for that. What about direct deposit of payroll? I think ACH is wonderful for direct deposit of payroll. Why would you move that over to RTP? So I think that you're going to see where use cases are going to dictate. And I think that's a good development in the payment space because we are now looking more at use cases rather than simply saying, because this is the newest thing, we should use this for everything.
And if I could add, so I see financial inclusion, I left it out of this conversation, financial inclusion is a big deal. I don't see regular direct deposit of payroll, ACH, migrating anytime soon. But I do see for folks who work in the gig economy, project to project, job to job, they want to get paid when they're done. And that a real-time payment would do that. For folks who run out of run out of money before they run out of month, they'd like their payroll maybe sooner so that they could pay that rent payment or not have to wait for a check to clear in order to make a payment.
That's interesting you bring that up about the payment on demand. I was just on my way to a meeting here recently, and there was a fast food restaurant. They had a sign out that said, make every shift a payday, because that is quickly becoming one of the expectations is that, why should I get paid once a week when I can get paid once a day or at the end of every shift?
Mm-hmm. So just my perspective on this, when I look at real-time payments and I look at the fact that, you know, going back to my earlier comment, it's about the timing of the payment. So even if you make a payment, you can dictate precisely when that's going to happen, whether it's happening at this very moment or whether it's happening at, 4 o'clock, 13 minutes this afternoon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the point is that I think there's a lot of value. There's also the information that comes with it is much superior. So I would see logically, right, going back to our logical conversation versus the other components, but real-time payments really becoming the de facto payment module or rail, I should say, in the future. But that said, you know, we've learned from checking that things don't always move as fast as they could. I mean, I remember back in the 90s where they were saying lockbox won't exist in 3 years.
Yeah, going away.
And I remember going to presentation in the 90s and they would show the volumes and it would show how it would shoot down. And then I remember like every 5 years they would redo the same slide and just push it out 5 years. Things just don't seem to happen as quickly. Now with
But they do, right? So let's talk about check. If you remember, we had paper checks, and at the clearinghouse, we treated our paper checks very well. We flew them on private charter jets from one end of the country to the other end of the country multiple times a day. When we saw Check 21 take effect, when it got implemented, and when Image Exchange got rolled out, we expected a 10-year ramp up with Image Exchange. Within 5 years, paper check exchanges were pretty much done. Remote deposit capture.
Why is that, though? Is it because they had to print them and it was like the duplication and the cost that was associated behind it?
I think a lot of it came down to the efficiencies to be gained through moving away from paper. Why do we need paper when we had created this infrastructure now that could support images? You were creating images anyway that were, you know, providing an expedited way to clear the paper. Why not just get rid of the paper exactly? And so I say that to say, I personally think that we're going to see the same thing with real-time payments. I mean, we're already seeing in excess of 100,000 transactions a day that flow over the RTP rails. 6 months ago, it may have been a few thousand. So it's very exponential, and I think that that's only going to increase as we move forward.
Yeah, and I think some of the peripheral things that we've been talking around, so if you think about cloud, connecting more people in the ecosystem in a real-time environment, and you look at machine learning or artificial intelligence, being able to take large amounts of data and take decisions immediately, those things didn't exist back in the 90s when they were talking about getting rid of checks. So the technology and environment today is so much different that it's not really apples to apples. So it'll be interesting as we look at the future. And I think, to your point, it's going to be a much faster pace. But we'll see. We have one more question.
Yeah, Joe, in your network of members, the ones that are slow to adopt, what do they see as the barriers to entry for real-time payments?
Lots of them have always been, historically, fast followers. So they're waiting to see it work. That's what they've always been. I would argue that they may be okay. It's the laggards. It's the member who just got their first mobile app that isn't really going to make it in this faster world. Banking has so many things going on. Are we going to digital branches? Are we building more branches? Are we destroying branches? There's so many digital banking issues going on. There's a lot of information to gather. And then it's a resource challenge. So the other part is the resource challenge. Those institutions that literally I was told, I was promoting a conference where we were going to show all the innovations happening in payments. And I had a CEO approach me and say, well, I don't want my staff to see innovations from other cores. I only want them to see the innovations from my core. Those sorts of mentalities are inhibiting innovation, inhibiting growth. And I really do believe it's that one killer app that's going to cause all of this to just explode exponentially. And again, if you can follow fast, you may be okay. But if your core is old, if you haven't updated in the last few years, if you don't plan, if you haven't formed the ideas behind either what is my payment strategy or what do I have to do prior to getting to my payment strategy, it's going to be a problem.
So I think, part of the other problem is the mindset of where banks are in terms of their uniqueness, right? So there's a perception by lots of financial institutions out there, especially as you go down market, the smaller ones, that they're very different. They're unique, right? Our customers love us because of our customer service, because of our white glove treatment. But the reality is there's a lot of banks that offer that kind of service and ability, especially as you go down market. I don't know that it's so unique. And the pace of change, and I'm not going to quote statistics from CEB or Gartner or Deloitte, but the people that are running these positions, such as CIO and CEOs even, it's all the newer generations, right? People that I think it's 5 years from now, people that are going to be in those positions is going to be like 80 or 90% people that like grew up with like,
Don't say it.
Yeah, I won't say it. I won't say it. All right. So, but the point is as you look at the demographics changing, it's not just within those companies, it's their customers. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the growth and you look at the digital banks or even the non-banks and how much they're growing double digit versus some of these smaller community banks, that should be telling, right? So I think there needs to be a realization from financial institutions that the landscape has changed and they need to change with it. Mm-hmm.
I agree, 100%.
All right. So I think that concludes our session. We are over time. I wanted to thank both of you. This was excellent. Thank you very much, Tim and Joe. I appreciate it. Thank you to the audience who is here attending live at our session. And thank you to those who have joined us through the podcast.
Excellent. Thank you.